get verification, and you get verification, and you get verification too. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this here Electronic Engineering Podcast brought to you by EEJournal.com and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. So yes, we are in the land of verification once again, my friends. Welcome, welcome. Don't forget a map. You can get seriously lost here. Trust me on that one. In this big land called verification, there is a town. An up-and-coming town. The hipsters are flocking here in droves. Wait, are we talking about my hometown of Portland, Oregon, or are we talking about portable stimulus? Well, I'll let you figure that one out. With a little help from Tom Fitzpatrick from Mentor Graphics. So I guess that does kind of give it away. Well, anyway, let's get started. Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Amelia. Good to talk to you.
So, Tom, today we are talking about portable stimulus, which has certainly gotten a lot of press in the last couple of years. And it's obvious that the Accelera Working Group has spent a lot of time in producing this standard. So, Tom, why do you think portable stimulus makes it worth all that effort?
So, the big problem that we've had, and I've been doing this for a long time. I started with Verilog back in 94, 95. Then System Verilog, UVM. We've been trying to focus on ways of making people more productive in verification, and the problem just keeps getting worse. So now we're facing system-level designs, which include a lot of software, and trying to create a methodology that allows you to go from the block level all the way through to the system level is kind of problematic. You know, I spent a lot of time on UVM. UVM is great at the block level, doing constrained random and things like that, but when you bring the system level stuff into it, particularly the software, trying to create the same kind of verification or reuse the same sort of, we call it test intent, is very difficult because the infrastructure for the testing is different. So at the block level, you're using UVM and System Verilog. At the system level, you're typically using C, which is more directed. So we really needed a way to kind of take that idea of sort of constrained random and bring it up to the system level. So with portable stimulus, we have developed a language to describe scenario level interactions of the system and then represent those in your specific implementation depending on whether you're going to be doing System Verilog, UVM, or C. So it's sort of like synthesis, where with synthesis for design, we had RTL, which was kind of an abstract representation of the hardware, and then we could generate the gate level from that. Now we have an abstract representation of your verification intent, the scenarios that you want to execute, the behaviors that you want to make sure happen, and the constraints on those behaviors. And then we can synthesize the implementation of that for your specific target platform. Again, whether it's, you know, simulation using UVM or System Verilog or emulation or FPGA prototyping or even PostSilicon using C.
So, Tom, let's get a little more into what exactly you mean by test intent.
For every design that you have, there are certain behaviors that you want to make sure you exercise. People always have asked me what I do, and I kind of tell them, before you go and spend millions of dollars to build this design, you have to make sure of two really important things. You have to make sure that it does everything it's supposed to do, and you have to make sure that it doesn't do anything it's not supposed to do. With portable stimulus, you can now describe these behaviors at an abstract level. So you create what we refer to as actions, which are these pieces of behavior, do a DMA transfer, send a packet, do, you know, those kinds of things. And you define the data flow between them. So, you know, this action is going to take a data type of this sort and produce a data type of this sort, and the other action is going to receive the data or whatever, that kind of thing. So you define for each action the inputs and outputs to it. So it's very much like transaction level modeling, but kind of one step higher, really, if you think about it. In addition to those behaviors, you then describe the relationship between them. So things like, if I'm doing this transaction or this operation, I can't do this operation at the same time. If you have a cell phone, you can't display a picture at the same time that you are recording a video or something. You know, whatever the constraints are of your system, you can build those into the description of the scenario. And then for each of those scenarios that you put together, you can say, okay, I want these specific behaviors to happen. And then there's all these other things in the system that might also happen that are related to these things in that they may produce data for them. They may consume data that the specific ones you want to have occur, you know, that kind of thing. So you basically define sort of a graph representation of the behaviors that you want to have happen and then the pile of other behaviors that the tool can figure out are necessary to make the specific scenario happen legally. And then from that abstract representation, we analyze the graph, figure out how to put all these things together, get this static representation of all of the different possible combinations of behaviors that can happen. And then from there, we can generate implementations for your given platform. So the test intent really is the behaviors of the things that you want to make sure happen. And then you also define the other set of things that are available in the system to help you make those things happen legally. In the same way that, you know, constrained random at the transaction level allowed you to generate stimulus that would cause things to happen that you hadn't really thought about, right? So if you say, you know, I can do a large packet here and a small packet there, or whatever, you may not have anticipated that when you did the design. Now we're taking that up to the system level where we're creating all these scenarios that are going to exercise things that are all legal but may be things that the designer hadn't originally thought about. We kind of take that idea of automation where you do one specification and the automation creates all of the different implementations for it, and then you can kind of see what happens.
So, Tom, I've heard that PSS lets you reuse test intent from block to SOC, but what if I don't have this need? Does PSS provide me any value?
The block SOC thing is what we typically refer to as vertical reuse. So for a given project, you're usually going to start at the block level, and then you put blocks together in a system, in a subsystem, and then you put things together where you bring the processor in, and that's kind of what we refer to as a system. But that's only one axis of reuse, really, if you think about it. The other that most people think about is what we call horizontal reuse, where you're going project to project. So when you create a design IP block, Portable Stimulus allows you to create all of the verification behaviors that that block has to be able to support. And then when you take that block and use it in another project, all of the Portable Stimulus information that you did along with it goes with it. So we actually envision that a lot of these behaviors, certainly at the abstract level, are going to be developed by the actual hardware designer. The hardware designer is going to define what the actions are, what the data flow is, and those kinds of things. And then the test writer will take those pieces, put them together, and develop the actual implementations for the simulation or emulation or t-tests or whatever. So horizontal reuse is a huge piece of it as well. It also allows you to have the abstract model be sensitive to the resources that are available in the system. So, for example, in one case, you may have four DMA channels, right? And so you might say, okay, I want to do four different DMA transfers at the same time. On the next project, you might be trying to cut costs, so you might only have two DMA channels. So you can't necessarily do those four behaviors at the same time, but you still want to make sure that they all happen. So when you go and generate your test, the tool is smart enough to know that you can only do two DMA transfers at a time, right? So you can still make the scenarios happen, but you're subject to the limitations of your specific design, you know, for any particular project. And then the other thing that we also like to think about, and I kind of mentioned this, is we refer to it as technique reuse. So this idea of using this constrained random approach at the scenario level. So even at the block level, this is really useful because in UVM, for example, you can do transaction level sequences that are really helpful, and you can maybe have a transaction sequence on each interface of your block. And then when those two run in random together, you're eventually going to get interesting things to happen. But also what you can do in UVM is have what we call a virtual sequence, which can control the operation of these other transaction level sequences for your block. With Portable Stimulus, instead of trying to do the virtual sequence, which is kind of difficult in a lot of cases and doesn't give you as much control as you might need, the Portable Stimulus representation kind of replaces that virtual sequence. And so we actually would generate a virtual sequence from the Portable Stimulus scenario, and it allows you to take this idea of scenario level randomization, even at the block level, and then that can get reused if you are going up to the system level as you go through. So we kind of think of it as three axes of reuse, so vertical, horizontal, and technique reuse.
Cool. Okay, so I know that Mentor Graphics has been a big supporter of Portable Stimulus for some time. Is that right, Tom?
We're not just supporters of the standard. We actually were the leading champions, I guess, if you will, of the Portable Stimulus standard in Accelera. We've actually had a tool called InFact, which has been around for a long time. It's actually the first Portable Stimulus tool. Back then, it was called Intelligent Test Bench Automation, but it's kind of the same thing, and it's been around for longer than any other tool that is out there. So we've been doing this for a long time. The reason that we wanted to push Accelera to standardize is we've seen what a lot of other people have seen, whether it was through specific verification languages or other things, where users were reluctant to engage with a proprietary tool, particularly one that would form the basis for a lot of their verification infrastructure moving forward. We're seeing that with a lot of people that have been using E for a long time. You know, E's kind of gone the way of the dodo, if you will, and so they're now faced with having to rewrite a lot of their existing infrastructure in UVM and System Verilog. So obviously people were reluctant to do that, even though we've had a lot of success with small number of customers that have been willing to make that leap with us because of the value they see in our, in fact, portable stimulus tool. We have been able to take that and go to Accelera and say, look, we really think that there's a movement that needs to be satisfied here to actually standardize on this. And by the time we did that, there were other tools around that did that or similar things. So we basically started with a feasibility study and showed that there was enough technology out there to support a standard and, more importantly, enough desire from the user community for a standard in this area. So we kind of made that happen. And then when the actual working group started up, I'm the vice chair of it. Faris Kungekci from Intel is the chair. And we have members from Cadence, Synopsys, other companies like AMD, NXP, several smaller consulting companies. Pretty broad cross-section of the industry is represented in the working group. But the thing that InFact brings, which is kind of how we've been able to demonstrate value even when it was proprietary to people, is that I mentioned earlier that we have the sort of graph-based representation of the things that you want to have happen. So if you look at that graph, it's a static structure that defines all of the possible scenarios that can be executed according to the scenario level constraints that you've specified for your system. So we can actually statically analyze that graph. And in particular, one of the pieces of portable stimulus description is coverage goals. So we actually use those coverage goals and we analyze the graph and pick the scenarios, the paths through the graph that will get you to your coverage goals most quickly. And we do that without repeating anything because we can look at all the possibilities up front. Right? With constrained random, coverage was more of a, okay, run random stuff. Things are going to repeat, but that's okay. Run for a while and then tell me what my coverage was. What we can do instead is use the coverage goals as part of the test generation process to generate tests that are specifically going to hit those coverage goals. You get the minimal number of tests to maximize your coverage in the least amount of time. And then once you've done that, you can actually tell the tool to, okay, go ahead and generate all the other scenarios that are outside of my coverage, you know, are still legal and may prove useful. We refer to that as bug hunting mode. So we've actually had people that use InFact to, you know, analyze this graph, look at their existing coverage, and also do some additional analysis on the design to create additional coverage points, things like make sure my FICO is going to max out and, you know, all those kinds of interesting things, split my memory area into interesting regions and that kind of stuff. So we actually create more coverage points for them, generate tests to hit all those coverage points. And we have plenty of data that shows that we've done everything from reach coverage 10x faster than standard simulation to creating tens of thousands more coverage points and also hitting those in less time, things like that. So the fact that we've been able to have the success we have and convince people to make an investment in a proprietary tool over the last several years led us to drive Accelera and bring other people in to partner with us to make this standard. So now from the user perspective, they can get this value by writing according to a standard. And then if they want to try that same code against another tool, they're free to do that. You know, Mentor has always been a huge proponent of standards. My friend Karen Bartelson, formerly of Synopsys, wrote a book, and the first commandment of standards is cooperate on standards, compete on tools, and we've always been comfortable doing that. This is no different from supporting System Verilog in our simulator, supporting UVM throughout our verification environment. Now portable stimulus is kind of the next big thing, and we support the standard today in our release. We're going to continue to add more support for the standard as we move forward, as everybody is, for probably the next year or so. Each of the tools, although they're going to claim to support the standard, they're each going to support a slightly different subset and that kind of stuff. But we expect by early 2020, pretty much everybody is going to support the full standard completely. And then it's going to be a question of what can you do with it? And we're already pretty well ahead of the game. This whole coverage analysis thing is something that's unique to Mentor. Others might be kind of moving in that direction, but we have it today. So we're pretty confident that we're going to continue to be a leader in the space as we move forward. The other thing that we do today, and this was kind of how we got people started with portable stimulus, is we can actually look at your existing UVM environment and we'll import the transactions and the coverage goals from your existing UVM infrastructure and create portable stimulus scenarios from that, and then do this coverage analysis that I talked about. With your existing UVM infrastructure, we can actually take that and target your coverage goals as you've defined them in System Verilog by converting them into portable stimulus and doing this graph-based analysis approach and then generating those tests specifically. So again, we hit the coverage goals without repeating anything and get you there much quicker. So you don't even have to write any portable stimulus yet. You can just take your existing UVM, bring it into InFact. We'll show you the benefits of the portable stimulus approach. And then from there, you can go on and create scenarios in your portable stimulus model and that kind of thing and go forward from there.
Excellent. Okay, Tom, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you're a big New England sports fan, but you're not from there, right? So how did you get involved with New England sports fandom?
So I actually grew up in New York. I was a Mets fan in baseball and football. I probably was more of a Jets fan than a Giants fan. But when I came up to MIT, I was living in Boston, and I quickly realized that everybody in Boston is in such a better mood when the teams do well that I started rooting for the local team. So I was a Red Sox fan in the American League. I continued being a Mets fan in the National League. And 1986 was actually my transition year. So I was still a Mets fan at that point. And I remember watching Game 6 of the World Series, the Bill Buckner game. I was still rooting for the Mets at that time. I was at a wedding in Nashville, Tennessee. And if it had gone another inning, they would have left me there because I was in the bar watching the game. So after that, I became a full Red Sox fan. My son has been raised a Red Sox fan, and he was probably 5 years old or 6 years old in 2004. We actually woke him up to see the end of the 2004 World Series. And then with the Patriots, he's known nobody other than Tom Brady as quarterback, and it's been great. So I'm not sure he understands how good he has it. So, yeah, it's been great.
I love it, and I'm pretty certain he does not know how good he has it. Well, Tom, it was a pleasure speaking with you, but I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And don't forget, our Twitter handle is EEJournalTFM. And we have a YouTube channel. Folks, it is keyword EE Journal, and it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, hosted by yours truly. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of January 25th, 2019, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.